Welcome to Green Connections Radio, where we are talking innovation with movers and shakers in energy and sustainability. You can find us online on greenconnectionsradio.com. Tune in, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and just about everywhere else I can imagine. I keep finding it on various websites. So I'm going to cut to the chase here. We are here at American University with the head of the Office of Sustainability. Megan Litke is her name, fabulous young lady in the new offices, slightly off campus. So welcome to Green Connections, Megan.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here.
You're welcome. Tell me exactly, what does the Office of Sustainability do?
So our mission on campus is to help the university achieve its sustainability goals. And those goals come from a commitment that our president, Dr. Kerwin, signed back in 2007 called the Climate, it's now called the Climate Commitment. It was previously the American College and University President's Climate Commitment. And through that commitment, we at American University have committed to achieving climate neutrality, reducing all of our emissions by as much as we possibly can, using renewable energy or offsets to get us to climate neutrality by 2020. So that is a major piece of what we do here, but the other piece is to work on environmental education. So we are charged with working to educate the entire campus community, so not just students in the classrooms, but students in their residence halls, students in organizations, staff who work in various functions across campus, and all of our faculty about sustainability in general, but also about what we're doing here on campus so that they can be actively involved.
Take me through the various programs to make the university itself sustainable. Tell us about what you're doing and how, I see transportation on your wall here on your whiteboard, you know, how transportation fits into it and what the students actually do, the student behavior fits into it.
Sure. So a big piece of our work here has been focused on renewable energy. And so we have renewables up on several of our buildings. I think it's about 10 or 11 buildings on campus have either photovoltaics or solar thermal for hot water. And so that was really our first step, was using a PPA to expand our renewables on campus. But most recently, we also developed renewables off campus, and we did that in partnership with George Washington University and George Washington Hospital.
And I'm a GW alum, by the way.
Well, now GW, along with us and the hospital, get 50% of our electricity from a solar farm in North Carolina that we developed together. At the time it was constructed, it was the largest installation of a renewable by a non-utility company in the country. It's been surpassed by others, which is great news for the environment already, and we now source our electricity from that farm. So we were able to go outside the district to build this large-scale renewable that we could take advantage of. So that's been a big piece of our work up to this point, is focusing on our electricity sourcing.
What percentage of American University buildings have solar panels or some kind of renewable energy source?
So we now source 100% of our electricity.
Oh, really? 100%? Okay.
Yeah. 50% comes from those solar farms in North Carolina, and the other 50% we buy renewable energy credits to offset.
Oh, okay.
So American University is 100% renewable electricity sourcing at this point, which is, yeah, that was the first big initiative. Great place to start, for sure. And that's obviously in connection with a lot of energy efficiency projects on campus. Despite expanding our footprint, we've been able to keep our electricity consumption even over the last few years, despite adding quite a bit of extra square footage. So our efficiency has really gone up in addition to using these renewables to deal with the electricity that we are going to continue using. But now as we move into this next phase, we're looking at the other sources of our emissions on campus. Electricity, while, you know, a big piece of our emissions, is sort of easy to deal with. You do efficiency, you use renewables. It's a clear-cut path to figure out how you're going to manage those sources of emissions. For the others, there are some bigger challenges. So for transportation, that's about a third of our remaining emissions that we have to deal with and figure out how we're going to offset in the next 4 years. And the transportation emissions come from study abroad, they come from our commuting, and they come from any travel related to university business. So anybody going to a conference, athletics travel, all of those things factor in. And we want to deal with them in ways that make sense. So right now we're investigating what we can do for study abroad. And I'm really excited about it because it's such a different part of our footprint than the other areas. Whereas with everything else, you try to drive down your usage, you try to drive down the emissions as much as you can before you figure out how to find a renewable source, how to manage them better. And for study abroad, that's an important part of the educational experience here. So we don't want to drive down those emissions. We want to find offset projects that are going to be meaningful for both the environment and for the educational experience.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because so much of travel is enhancing. I mean, I know people who don't go to conferences anymore because they don't want to incur the carbon footprint. And it's like, yeah, but you're going to, there's so much other benefit to going.
Mm-hmm.
So is it buying carbon credits, or is it, I mean, how do you offset study abroad and travel in general? I mean, I suppose when they're doing certain travel that requires a vehicle, you can try to have a, you know, some kind of an eco-friendly vehicle.
Yeah.
But then there's planes and mm-hmm. trains.
Right.
Besides the automobiles, right? So how does that work exactly?
For study abroad, we're still figuring out the details. We haven't moved forward with it yet. But what we're hoping to find are offset projects that are taking place and being implemented in countries where we have some either large student population or a special connection through a specific program that we work with, so that those offsets will not only do something good for the environment in the country that we're working with and in, but also can be brought back into our classrooms or into the study abroad experience in some way, so we can help use them to help students recognize that their study abroad experience is obviously valuable from an educational standpoint, but it does have an environmental impact, but we can do things to offset that and balance it out and create some value added in the classroom through that. So we're hoping that the projects we work with will be able to provide us with either data or pictures, opportunities to learn more about that specific project and how it's benefiting either the community or the environment in that area of the world, that our faculty who are back here on campus can use to teach their students who might be going abroad next semester to really think about that part of their experience.
So how do you communicate that? I mean, it's do you do like a case study? Do you give the professors tools to help explain it? Do you give the tools to the students? I mean, how do you actually communicate all of this?
Yeah, we plan to work with faculty to figure out how they'll want to incorporate it in their classroom, and then it'll absolutely be things like case studies and toolkits that have all of the if it's a class that's going to benefit from specific data, if we are working on a project that's going to have measurable outcomes, then those faculty might really be interested in getting the raw data. And so we would want to be able to provide that to them. Or if they're more interested in just sharing the story, then we would create case studies. We do that now for things like our green buildings. We have case studies for those so that people who are interested in learning why a specific building we have is green can read about the different features that are related to water or energy. And so it would be the same idea.
Yeah, and I want to know more about your green buildings. But just to stay on this for one second, it seems to me that you would want a different kind of toolkit or case study or communication vehicle depending upon whether the student is a business student or a civil engineering student or a sustainability degree of some kind or just a garden variety, whatever, degree or even a political science degree, for mm-hmm. example. So I would imagine, I mean, is it the same tools no matter what their study?
No, I would hope not. Right now, we offer campus tours to faculty, and we tailor every tour we give to the class that we're presenting to, if they're freshmen, if they're seniors, if they're business majors, if they're environmental studies students. We want to make sure that the information they're hearing is applicable to them, and so we would want to carry that same idea into these case studies. So we'll want them to be, you know, if you're a business major, then this part of this document applies to you. If you're into the sciences, then this part of the data is what you're going to want to look at.
And be relevant. So do you get pressure from the student body to do any of that? What was the genesis? Was it pressure from the students? Was it pressure from the students to divest of fossil fuels in your endowment funds, for example? You mentioned that the president of the university did these initiatives, but what made him decide to do that?
Long before I got here, the students were the ones who brought forward this idea at American University to get the president to sign. And that was largely the case throughout the country when presidents of universities were initially signing onto the climate commitments. So our students drove the initial signing, and they continue to drive where we'll go now. There's a big student push towards our waste program on campus, making sure that zero waste is achieved. And that's another one of our goals, is moving towards zero waste and keeping as much as we can out of landfills. And our students are really largely involved in that. And that's been a big area where we've worked with them. They want to know where we're sourcing our food from. They want to know where our waste is going when it leaves campus. So all of those things are really important to driving our work from year to year. So we definitely value what the students bring to the table, and we want to capture their enthusiasm and work with them to help them get their university where they want it to be.
You know, it's funny, but every campus says, you know, the students pressured us, whatever, but students rotate. I mean, they're all, you know, there's different students here from year to year, right? So there's not one group of students.
Okay,
so
yes.
How does that work over time? Because you've got people coming in with different values each time.
There's definitely an ebb and flow to the type of pressure we get and the focus areas, for sure. There are students who are really interested in the behind-the-scenes policies some years, and then students who are really interested, like I said, in waste right now is where we're seeing a big push. But it just shifts from year to year, and so we try to be flexible in capturing that energy and making sure we can work with them. Sometimes it's easier than others, for sure, but we want to support them. It's their university.
Well, I'm sure it also evolves as your programs evolve. I mean, as your programs get more sophisticated, you know, if they already see that all the buses transporting the students around campus are electric or natural gas or hydrogen fueled, that's off their list, right? They're not going to ask for that now. So they're going to ask for something else.
Exactly.
And it's also probably what they're hearing about in the news. So has the climate agreement, the Paris Climate Change Agreement, had an impact on the university's planning at all?
Largely no. Our planning has really been in alignment with achieving those goals.
Those goals anyway.
Yeah, since we're already working towards neutrality by 2020,
right.
We're on track with that. So it wasn't, we certainly looked into it to make sure that we were supportive of it. Dr. Kerwin signed a commitment through the White House prior to Paris, adding American University to a list of many other universities who were fully committed to achieving climate goals and wanted to show our support for signing in Paris.
And the Sustainable Development Goals, I imagine.
Yes. Yes.
What's your biggest challenge?
I would say sometimes it's just hard on a campus that's dispersed and large.
And urban.
Urban. To make sure everybody's aware of what we're doing. Sometimes really exciting things happen, and it takes a while to get that information spread throughout our community. Things like our giant solar farm in North Carolina.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I would imagine that there are a lot of people on campus who would also be surprised to learn about it and excited to learn about it. There are plenty of people on campus who certainly are well aware of it, but just communicating across such a broad audience. We have students who are only here at night, students who live off campus and on campus. So finding them all takes a while. And that is a challenge when we try to implement something new and get people on board. But one of the things we were successful with this year, related to transportation and driving down emissions in our local transportation, was that we were the first university in the area to adopt something called UPass, the University Pass through Metro. So all of our full-time students pay a small fee through their fees with their tuition to get a Metro card that allows them unlimited access to Metro and Metro bus throughout DC, which is wonderful for the educational opportunities it provides, the bit broader connection to the city, but it also gives students a reason to not rely on vehicles while they're here at American. And so that has been hugely successful, and it's really great to see students taking advantage of it.
You were able to communicate about that.
Yeah, yeah. It was a broad effort with lots of different offices involved.
Yeah, I'm sure. So in closing, what would you say to someone, particularly a woman, because we focus on women, but not only women, to someone who wants to be you, wants to have a job like this? Whether they're coming, whether they're, you know, coming out of college, or they're an established person in mid-career, what would you say to them What would be, like, what do you wish you knew 10 years ago or something? Or what do you think is the best training? What do you think is the best way to go about getting a job like this?
Yeah. I would say, that's such a good question. I would say the exciting thing about jobs like this is that there's no one path. So it's impossible to take a wrong turn on your way to a career like this. It's such a new career that even when I go to conferences now and I meet new people in this profession, it's always interesting to hear how they got there. I started my career as an accountant out of college, went back to school and got a master's in sustainability and management, and environmental management, and now get to do this work. But there's just no one right path. I think it's really about finding a diverse set of experiences. So learn a little bit about transportation, learn a little bit about renewable energy, learn about ecological problems and watershed management. They all pop up, and you don't have to be an expert in all of them. You can't be an expert in all of them, and that's okay. But it's important to understand where the connections lie so that you don't miss opportunities when they pop up, because sometimes watershed management and transportation overlap in an interesting way. And if you have enough of an understanding of both, you can take advantage of those and find new careers.
That's a really great point. And one of the reasons why I think it's great is because you can find creative solutions that way too. And you can find creative partners. I mean, who would have thought that American University would go out of the community to find a solar farm? I mean, obviously there's more sun in the South, okay, duh. But you could have gone to Arizona, you could have gone to New Mexico, you could have gone to California, you could have gone to, you know, fill in the blank, right? And then there's also the energy, the water nexus, for example. And so I would think that having that, you can see, I mean, it's like the innovator's DNA model is, mm-hmm. you know, associations and observations, is that somehow you can find, well, let's partner with these people. It might not sound obvious, but here's the non-obvious association. Here's how they overlap, and here's what it can do for us exponentially. And those ideas can also make you shine. I mean, frankly, I'm biased because I've done that. It's like the hallmark of my career. So when you have a diverse set of experiences and you have a diverse perspective, then you can see those non-obvious associations.
Absolutely.
And you can see better solutions for your campus or for your company or your company campus. And you can also see career paths and jobs that might be interesting to you that you really hadn't thought about before.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most exciting things about sustainability. There's so many opportunities for creativity, carving a new path, looking for solutions that haven't been thought of before, or just twisting a solution that's somewhere else to make it fit your slightly different problem. And that alone involves enough creativity that it keeps the job constantly interesting and constantly changing.
So a little different than accounting.
A little different than accounting.
So thank you so much. This is great. You've really been terrific. And those ideas and that kind of creativity is why we love talking to people like you on Green Connections, because energy and sustainability impact every single aspect of our lives and our world.
Yes, I couldn't.
It's
yes,
probably the only thing that intersects across the board, right?
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us, Megan Litke at American University Office of Sustainability. Tell us what you heard Megan say. You can send it to us on our Facebook page, on Twitter at Joan Michelson, or email it to us at info@greenconnectionsradio.com. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is David Goldberg, president of Edge Studio, a voiceover company. We oversee professional narrators and voice actors for sales videos, training videos, telephone pre-recorded systems, commercials, web videos, and all applications requiring voiceover. And in fact, for over 20 years and in over 100 languages, we have been considered the most trusted and the friendliest leader in the voiceover industry. We're a green company with efforts towards sustainability at all of our studio locations. EdgeStudio.com. Sound people who are happy to help.